The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, joined by my co-host, Will Lomas, and we're here to recap the Titans' first preseason game of 2022. Unfortunately, they ended up falling to the Baltimore Ravens 23-10, but really shouldn't feel too bad about it. I think the Ravens have won like 21 straight preseason games, I think it is. I'm not totally sure on the exact number, but they're just a preseason machine. John Harbaugh gets them going. They always have good depth, and they're always a well-coached team. But we don't really care about the score. Preseason scores don't necessarily matter. We care more about how certain players performed. So we're definitely going to talk about Malik Willis's performance, given that he started this game. We're going to talk a little bit about Treylon Burks, who a lot of people were kind of down on him because of this game, but we actually have evidence to support that he played pretty well. So we're excited to talk about all that. Before we do, kind of just wanted to get your thoughts, Will, on the game as a whole. Do you think there were any real warning signs, or just, you know, another preseason game where they're trying to get some guys some playing time early on?
No, I don't think there's any big takeaways to really come away with. There were some like minor things that were interesting, like instead of starting Corey Levin at center and Aaron Brewer at left guard, which I thought made the most sense, they started with Aaron Brewer at center and then Jamarco Jones at left guard, which, you know, okay, like that's fine. But that was kind of a weird thing that you don't put him there and kind of see like him versus the Ravens top guys while you had the chance. There were small things like just the fact that like just starting Malik Willis in general was like an interesting thing, because to me it signaled that they were going to be more aggressive, and I don't necessarily think that they were. So I don't know, like it felt like there were some half measures or some weird things that they wanted to take a look at. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's much to take away from this game in terms of like we know more about the team now than we did before we went into it.
Yeah, I agree. Really, there weren't too many notable things. What I found a little bit interesting was that Farley and Fulton were playing pretty much with the backups in the first quarter, and then Fulton got taken out, and then Farley was still playing into the second quarter. I don't know if that really means anything. I don't know if there's anything to take away from that other than they kind of want to get some playing time, given that they're coming off injuries, kind of knock the rust off ahead of the regular season. Do you think there's anything to look into with that, or do you think that's just what it is?
I mean, I think they just want Farley in the same thing with, you know, Burks and some of these other guys too. Is I think the guys that they're going to rely on during the season that didn't get a lot of play, a lot of time in the regular season because of injury or whatever. Like specifically with Farley, like, you know, we all know his injury history and all that, but people forget that he sat out 2020 because of COVID, and then he was injured before that and missed a whole year, I believe, with an ACL injury, like in 2018, I think. Like, I think 2019 was the longest he's played, and he also converted from wide receiver to corner. I'm 98% sure. So he just has not played corner very long at any level. So to play at, you know, to play in college in the ACC, okay, like that's fine. It's not as close to the NFL as the SEC is. So there's going to be an even bigger jump for him than some of the other guys, but then he gets injured again. And he also missed, it's a lot of time not playing corner, and you can answer things on the chalkboard all day. And supposedly he does. And, you know, Vrabel loves that and has praised him over and over, and he's bigger and stronger now. So that's all positive, but you want him to get that muscle memory in. So I don't think it's anything other than, you know, let's get the young guy reps.
Yep, I agree. A couple other things that stood out to me. Well, not really stood out to me, but Julius Chestnut playing so much was kind of weird. I don't know if there was really any need for that. I don't think he's going to make the team, but a lot of these guys aren't. But I would have liked to see a little bit more of Hassan Haskins. He just looked better, to be honest, even though the numbers might not show it. He looked better, and I thought he looked pretty smooth as a pass catcher, which is good news if he's going to, you know, have to fill in for Derrick Henry in case of an injury or something like that. I also liked what I saw from DeMarcus Walker early on. He was playing a good amount. He was kind of making his presence felt among backups. Of course, it has to be said, but I think he's kind of starting to cement his place on the roster. I think Murchison played, but he played late, if I'm correct. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Walker has beaten out Murchison already. I don't know if there's much else Murchison could do to even get one of those depth spots.
Yeah, I think they love Walker, and I think he's, for whatever reason, I don't think he's bad or anything, but I also don't think he's like, you know, it's not like they went out and signed Justin Houston in the middle of the season, or in the middle of the offseason, and I don't know. They like him. He looked fine. He's bigger than I thought he would be on the field. Like, he looked like wider, but he did. He played everything right. Like he played backside. Like, he played the quarterback if there was a boot and all that. Like, he wasn't cheating trying to make a play. So that tells me that he's pretty comfortable with his role, and he's not trying to go out and make every play boom or bust to try to make the team. So, you know, you like that comfort level. And there's something to be said about having guys like Walker and Weaver who both can play that Denico Autry. Like, sometimes I'm a defensive end, but I can also be a defensive tackle if I need to kick inside and, you know, for some nickel looks. Like, I've got versatility. I can also be a heads up, you know, six technique on a tight end if y'all want to play it that way. So you can put Harold Landry on the other side. Like, I like having those kind of guys because it gives you more options. But I don't think there's at this point, I think there's five defensive linemen. If you call Denico Autry a defensive lineman and you call Rashad Weaver an edge, I think there's five defensive linemen that are locked in, and it's pretty much everybody that I've named. So, and Murchison's not on that list. So unless something changes, that's the way I see it going down.
Yep. And I also liked what I saw from the returners in this game. They did a really good job. Phillips had a good punt return. Racy McMath even chipped in with a good kick return. And then I think Cannon and Godwin had some decent returns as well. So that's good news, especially after we had a couple of seasons where the return game was just horrific. So hopefully it seems like that'll be solved. It already kind of was last year, but it seems like we have a lot of good options this year. So we're going to take our first quick ad break of the episode, and then we're going to come back and talk about Malik Willis and Treylon Burks' first games with the Titans.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back in to No Nonsense, Tennessee Titans podcast. I think what most people are going to want to hear about is Malik Willis' performance, how he did in his first game. I personally think it was a mixed bag, probably more on the negative side, at least for me. I just thought he was a little too tentative with a lot of things, just wasn't pulling the trigger, and he was too quick to kind of scramble, you know. He wanted to evade the pocket and run, and that's okay. I mean, listen, he's a third-round rookie. There's going to be growing pains. He has a lot of stuff left to work on, and his development is still in progress. But I would have liked to see him, you know, kind of just let loose a little more, because every time the Ravens had the ball on offense, Tyler Huntley and Anthony Brown were giving their guys, their big receivers, chances on these jump balls, contested catches. And we really just didn't see that from Malik Willis, which was kind of frustrating, I think. But I'm not panicking, of course. I'm not even expecting him to play at all this season. I'm expecting Tannehill to be the starter from day one and up until the last game of the season. So not panicking, but I would have maybe liked to see a little bit more from him as a passer. How would you – you don't have to put a letter grade on it, but how would you grade his first performance as a Titan?
Yeah, it's weird because it's like in my head, it's more like, you know, a curve. Like the beginning of the game, I thought he did, you know, pretty bad. Like he should have thrown it to, I think it was Racy McMath on that play action boot. And he stared at him and stared at him and stared at him. And then he rocketed it to Torrey Carter, who was 2 feet in front of him. And, it, you know, that was a very, you know, not ready for the moment kind of play, which happens. I mean, he's, like I said, you know, he's a rookie. Like, that's not terrible, but I think he started off 0-for-3 and he almost threw an interception to whoever was covering Kyle Phillips on an out route, which I thought was a weird play call anyway. But, you know, that was bad. And then I don't know if it was the next drive or what, but all of a sudden he ends up with, and this three-play stretch spans over two drives, but he ends up with the touchdown run, the sidearm pass, and the Racy McMath pass, and those were fantastic. Like, if you can get 8 of those plays a game, you know, that's a Pro Bowl quarterback. Like, it was, those plays were that special. And the Mason Kinsey route on for like 20 yards in the 2-minute drill was great too. But then later he holds on the ball too long and he rolls out and he stares and stares and stares and gets sacked in bounds with, you know, 30 seconds left. And the Titans had just used a timeout. So like they had to use their last timeout there. You know, that's a play you can't have. I mean, that can't happen. And all you had to do is throw the ball away and, you know, live to fight another day. And that's something that he should know from college. Like, that's not a new thing that's changed in the NFL. Like, that's just an instinct thing. But all in all, I think it was fine. I think he missed a lot of plays, and I've been pretty vocal about it on, you know, Twitter and stuff, that there were a lot of plays that he left on the table. And people don't go back and watch preseason games, but people don't go back and watch playoff games either. So, you know, I don't expect everybody to see everything the same way, but I would encourage everybody to go. There's a let me see who posted that video. There's a video, a 4-minute video that everybody should go check out, and it's essentially like all the plays that could have been thrown to Treylon Burks that just weren't thrown there. And it's by their name on YouTube, or the YouTube account is The Football Scout. And I mean, if you search Treylon Burks, like it comes up first. So you don't have to look too hard, but it's a 4-minute video, and it shows all the times that, you know, especially in deep routes, that there were these really nice routes where he showed Treylon Burks showed some nuance and really kind of figured out exactly how to attack whatever coverage that they were facing. And Malik Willis just doesn't even look his way. And that's pretty aggravating. But, you know, it's for a first game against a team that takes preseason very seriously. You know, it was a passable grade that was exactly what you thought it would be. It's super exciting at some points and super frustrating in other points. And, you know, Vrabel even said that the reason he pulled him out was because they wanted him to have one more drive. And supposedly Vrabel said, you know, just go out there and rip it. And it's not that he, you know, tucked the ball and ran when he did on the last play before he got taken out, but it was that he wasn't doing what he was out there to do. So if they go out there and they say, hey, you know, throw the ball around, like, let's make some plays, and you don't do that, you know, they're not going to leave you out there to get sacked and potentially hurt. Like, they're going to pull you. And that's what happened. And that's a fairly disappointing way for him to end that preseason game. But he's got to learn that that's part of the job. Like, that's what got Mariota, you know, essentially run off by Mike Vrabel, was that, you know, he was so afraid of throwing interceptions that he wasn't giving his guys chances to make plays. And you don't want to turn the ball over, and ball security is always going to be something that every coach, but Vrabel specifically, preaches. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you have Racy McMatt, you have these big, tall receivers, and you have like Chigakonkwo out there and Haskins, who's doing well, you know, catching the ball. Like, you got to give your guys a chance to make plays. And if you're not doing that, you know, in a preseason game, it's okay for you not to be out there. So I'm interested to see what happens next with him, but I think it's the perfect video or perfect cut up to go back and look at and say, like, okay, this is why he has promise, but it's also why he's not ready for 2022, and 2023 is still a wait and see process.
I'm glad you brought up Mariota, because I was going to bring him up too. I think it was the exact thing that we kind of pinned as Mariota's biggest negative. Like, he just would not pull the trigger on a lot of these 50-50 plays that so many other quarterbacks consistently trust their receivers to make. Like, we saw it with Rodgers and Devontae Adams all the time. We saw it with Mahomes and Kelce and Tyreek Hill, you know, Julio Jones on the Falcons. Like, you just have to let your guys make plays sometimes. And especially when you're considering that, like you mentioned it also, like, he had Treylon Burks out there. He had Chigakonkwo out there. Kyle Phillips was out there. Like, these guys are better than the Ravens backups, and they could beat their guys. And they were beating their guys, particularly Treylon Burks, who we're going to talk about in a second. But Malik Willis just wasn't giving them the opportunity to do so. It, to me, it's a negative, but I also, like, don't want him out there throwing interceptions, you know? So it's kind of like, it's a little bit of both sides. You kind of pick your poison, but I just would have liked to see him be a little less gun-shy and take more chances, especially because it was a preseason game. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, he doesn't really have anything to lose other than, you know, maybe the backup job. That's really all he's competing for, and considering how awful Logan Woodside looked on those interceptions, especially the first one. I don't think he has anything to worry about. So I'm hoping that in the second game, he's going to come out, be a little more aggressive. I think the coaches are kind of going to instill it in him and tell him, look, man, you have literally nothing to lose. Just go out there, have fun, throw the ball to your guys, throw some jump balls, and let's see what happens. Because after all, it's just preseason, and you kind of have to get used to it, because that's the way you're going to win games in the regular season. You can't just run all the time. So, yeah, well, I mean, go ahead.
Let me also say this. Like, I think that the starting Malik Willis makes all the sense in the world in the preseason. Like, preseason game three, I'm not convinced he shouldn't get every snap, because the way you have to look at it is, okay,
he needs reps.
Yeah, and if your entire thing is, okay, Woodside, the best thing about Woodside is you can drop him in the offense whenever you need to, and he's, you know, he knows it so well that he can, you know, instantly, like, give you a bigger or a more consistent product than Malik Willis. If that's your argument, then he shouldn't need preseason games, because he's a guy who's supposed to be able to go from not playing, not, you know, being on the field for 3 months to starting the next week if you need him to. And if that's true, then why is he, in, you know, what is he going to give you in the preseason other than looks for some of the wide receivers and skill position players? So, but, you know, by that, but if all those things are true, then the most valuable way to use your preseason is give Malik Willis as many reps as you possibly can, because he needs to understand what he's seeing, and he's not going to have those for the next, you know, 5 months. So he needs to see what it's like in live action, tackling, like his throw to Chigakonkwo, like where he hung him out to dry. Like, people were like, oh, Chig should have caught that. It's like, no, like, Chig's not in a no contact jersey. Like, he would have gotten his head taken off by that safety, and, you know, the safety gets, you know, a flag, but, you know, now Chigakonkwo has to miss, you know, all these training camp joint practices and all that. So, like, it was not worth it for Okonkwo to go out there and lay out and die for that ball. So, you know, he needs to understand that where the windows are, where you can't throw it because you're throwing a hospital ball, like all these things. And the only way to do that with this sort of speed is to play him in preseason. And again, if the only thing that, because there's no argument for Woodside other than the fact that he's going to be a C minus every time you put him on the field, and he's going to be that way whether you do it in preseason or whether you do that in January. And if he can't do that, then you need to find somebody else who can, because there are other people who can do better than him, you know, just in terms of being a, you know, a steady guy. So, but by that token, there's no reason why Willis should ever come off the field.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm overly negative on Willis. Like, I'm very aware that he was a third-round pick. He fell for a reason. He played at Liberty. He's a rookie. Like, these are the growing pains that we're going to have to go through. All in all, I think it went okay. Like, I think it could have gone a lot worse given the how much he has to go until he's, like, you know, NFL starter ready. But, I mean, a lot of the plays that he had were really exciting, and you saw some of the tools that enticed the Titans. So that's good. I mean, I would rather see that version of Malik Willis if Tannehill can't start a game during the regular season than whatever version of Woodside we're going to get, to be honest. But, I mean, maybe that's just a personal taste. So let's talk about Treylon Burks, because I feel like there was a lot of negativity around him during and after this game. And then the All-22 comes out, and you mentioned the video, the 4-minute cut up from, I think it was the Football Scout on YouTube. And we really implore you to go watch it. We'll link to it on Twitter just so you guys know what we're talking about. But, man, he was getting open at will, it seemed, at least on, I don't know, 5 or 6 plays that could have gone for really big gains. Two of them could have even been touchdowns if Malik Willis could have find him. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because there's already a narrative about Treylon Burks out there. It's all negative. because of the offseason conditioning thing. Then he has a bad box score line in this game, and none of it was his fault. And the negative narrative keeps building, but if you go back and look, you kind of see that there's a lot to be, you know, excited about.
Yeah, like, it was a really weird sort of night for him, because like you said, like, go, everybody should pause this right now and go watch that 4-minute video of what Burks did, because if you don't believe me, then you'll believe it when you see it. And it's not plays where, you know, Malik Willis has already turned his back to the, you know, it's not plays where it was an impossible throw to make or even a difficult throw to make. It's just Malik Willis is either not seeing it because he's stuck on a different read, or he's not throwing it because he just doesn't throw with the anticipation yet. And it's hard to throw with anticipation with, first of all, with a receiver you haven't worked with a lot, because Burks has been with the first and second team a lot more than he's been with the third team. And it's also difficult when, you know, you might have Burks, Willis, and Racy one play, and then Mason Kinsey, Josh Malone, and, you know, Godwin in the next play. It's like, when you have so much change, it's hard to throw with anticipation because everybody doesn't run the same exact route, the same exact way, at the same exact speed. So that part I'm not putting on Willis. What everybody should take away from this video is that Burks is doing the correct things, and he's doing the things you want to see before the ball is thrown to him. And that once there's a more experienced quarterback with better chemistry in, say, Ryan Tannehill, that these plays are there to be made. So that's, it's important to see those. But the weird thing is, you know, you got a jet sweep to Treylon Burks, and cool, like, you get 5 yards off of that. You know, he pushes a guy to the ground before a second one comes and knocks him out of bounds. And that's, like, that's great. That's what you want to see. But other than that, there wasn't any plays designed for Treylon Burks. There was no quick screen to him. There was no, like, you know, hit your back foot on the third step and then throw it. Like, that, there seemed to be no plays designed for him with Malik Willis. And I guess the reason why that is because you don't want to teach Malik Willis to stare down receivers and, like, to just focus on one particular person on a play, which, like, okay, like, I guess if you're trying to build up Willis, that's one way to do it. And, you know, you want to make it as realistic as possible so he can get through his reads. But at the same time, you also basically rob Treylon Burks of the opportunity to, you know, get those, you know, get those premium reps and really learn and get better in the preseason. But they also made him play, like, into the fourth quarter, and he was playing special teams, and he was run blocking and doing, and I thought he did, I don't think there was anybody, that any wide receiver that was out there that was better run blocking than he was. You know, I don't know if it was the best, you know, for a regular season, but he was doing the right things, and he was pushing defensive backs inside, and he was, you know, maintaining leverage and all that. And, you know, the most successful run of the day, or I guess at least in the first half, was behind him on the right side when he came up and, you know, basically checked in. I think it was the in-man line of scrimmage was a linebacker, but it may have been a slot corner. But, you know, once he sees he's inside, he makes the smart move to go to the safety, and he, you know, gets a body on him. And that's, you know, that's a really heads-up play. So you're not just looking at a guy and then going in and getting a holding call for no reason. Like, he did what he was supposed to do, and then it set up Chestnut for his best play. So all that to say, like, Mike Vrabel coming out and saying that, you know, Treylon Burks was inconsistent, and then understand, like, Rob Moore, whether he believes it or not, his job is to agree with the head coach. And so there was no world where after he said that Rob Moore was going to come out and say, actually, you know, Burks did a great job and he wasn't inconsistent. So I don't view that as validation. I view that as solidarity between the coaching staff. But I don't know what Vrabel was wanting. Like, I don't know if there's plays where he's supposed to do something else. Like, he's supposed, like, but when you watch him, it's not like he's running bad, you know, rounded routes or anything like that. It's not like he's not giving effort in the running game. He's playing on special teams and, you know, doing fine there. So I don't know what what the goal was for him on Thursday if it wasn't what you saw. And then the one time there was a concerted effort to get him a deep pass, it was when Woodside was in, and Woodside throws it directly to the safety when it's a cover one, and all Woodside has to do is throw it to the back right pylon, and Burks has 7 yards of separation between him and anybody else, but because he throws it into the safety, you know, all of a sudden it's a contested pass that shouldn't be contested, and you know, it's easier for the safety to make a play, and Burks still almost comes down with a catch. So I don't know. I thought that was a very strange day, and I don't know why people seem to have not watched it and seen the same thing, other than the fact that you watch the game and you're so enthralled with Malik Willis that by the time you look up, you look at the box score and realize that Treylon Burks hasn't caught a pass yet. And I think that's what happened to most people. But I would encourage anybody listening who hadn't rewatched it and doesn't want to rewatch it to go watch that video, and also next week against Tampa Bay, watch him independent of who's at quarterback, and just watch him on a few plays and watch how he releases and does all that, because you should be impressed with what he's shown in training camp already. But if you weren't, then you can see it against live competition in these games.
Yeah, and man, I specifically remember he was lined up on the left side, and he had a chance. He was holding off the cornerback on his way to the end zone on a route, and Willis kind of looked at him, but he just didn't pull the trigger. And I don't want to keep being negative towards Willis, but that's exactly the kind of play that Burks came down with at Arkansas, and that's what had us so excited, because aside from all the after the catch explosive ability stuff, he was also a really good contested catch receiver, and we saw him come down with a lot of these jump balls. So hopefully Tannehill during the regular season actually gives him the opportunity to come down with some of these. I mean, even on the Woodside throw, that was horrendous. I mean, it was a terrible throw, but we saw he jumped up there. He almost mossed the safety. He could have come down with it, and we would be having a completely different discussion, even though it was a terrible throw to begin with. But I don't want to be so negative about Woodside, but Woodside, I feel like he knows every single play and knows where every player is going to be, knows where every route is going. So he's just going to throw it exactly where the route is going, regardless of whether there's a defender there. That is not great. Not what you want in your backup quarterback. But anyway, just to kind of finish up on Treylon Burks, I even had in my notes that he was run blocking really hard. You mentioned on that long chestnut run, he was hounding his defensive back. It happened on a couple other occasions, too. So I don't know why I saw some tweets questioning his effort. Maybe some of the routes weren't great, and maybe he could have given more effort. But when you're getting open consistently and you're not getting thrown the ball to you, you're going to start taking routes off. Every single wide receiver is the same way. You know, it is what it is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating for the receiver because you know you should be getting the ball. And it's not coming to you. So I don't know if there were any effort concerns about that. I don't think it's very credible. I honestly I came away with this from this game pretty optimistic about not only Burks but the receiver room in general, because I thought Racy McMath kind of continued his offseason hype. Kyle Phillips looked solid. He didn't get any targets, but he looked the same as he has in camp. Chigakwonkwo looked solid, not receiver, but same type of thing. And we've seen so many good reports and videos of Robert Woods kind of working his way back from the ACL injury, and he looks really good. Looks like he's going to be ready for the regular season. So I'm excited. I think the receiver room is going to be better than we kind of anticipated, and I feel pretty comfortable with them as a whole.
Yeah, it's without Hooper, without Robert Woods, without Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, basically without the starters, the other people did enough to be excited. And the good thing is, it looks like this is going to be a year where we don't have to worry about, you know, a Cam Batson, where it's like somebody who they tell you is really good on special teams, even though they're not doing anything on special teams and they're not making any visible, tangible impact. Like, it seems like Racy McMath might be that guy. Like, I think he had two tackles. I think one was on an interception, one was on special teams. And, you know, if he's going down and making tackles on special teams and then also catching deep passes and returning the ball a little bit, like, that's enough utility to keep him active, even if you only want to play him on offense 8 snaps a game. But that's good because it means that, you know, the Titans have always made sure that they try to keep their wide receivers in bubble wrap. Like, even before last year, it's like you get, I think A.J. Brown had something like 4 or 5 games in his career where he had more than 90% of the snaps. And that's because the Titans just rest their receivers. Like, they rotate them in and out all the time. So if you know that going into it, the better your quote unquote other wide receiver that's going to be on the field, the better that you want that guy to be as good as possible so that you're not ending up with some guy who's only on the team because he can catch punts, taking 10 to 15 reps of the first team offense, because that just means you're playing with your hand tied behind your back on those plays. So I think you should be encouraged with what you've seen so far. And I think the guys that aren't playing are even better.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go through some winners and losers from this game to kind of wrap up our recap. I think the biggest loser is Woodside. I hate to keep harping on him, but he really didn't do anything to cement his spot as the backup. Even though Willis wasn't amazing, he at least gave you something different. And Woodside throwing those 2 interceptions and really just not getting anything going. I know he was playing with the 3rd string, 4th string, but you got to do something to at least show the coaching staff that you can be anything other than a low-level game manager, and I really don't think he did. Another loser, in my opinion, I don't know. AJ Moore, the safety, he's like a special teams guy, but he was playing a good amount on the defensive side of the ball. I don't understand what they see in him. He's always looking the wrong way, has no awareness, is missing tackles, doesn't really do anything positive for the team. And Theo Jackson just looked way better than him. And I don't see any reason to keep AJ Moore over Theo Jackson at this point. But, you know, the coaching staff always seems to love these types of players. I also didn't like what I saw from Chance Campbell, the sixth round linebacker from Ole Miss. He was too slow on a lot of these plays. He just couldn't make it to the edge. And then Jack Gibbons comes in, number 50. He's like the 3rd string, maybe 4th string linebacker. He just looked way quicker than him. So not great news for Campbell. And as for some winners for me, we already talked about Racy McMath a little bit. He just continued his really strong training camp, had the catch, the long catch. Then he had a good kick return as well. I think he's locked in as one of the receivers and a core special teamer. In terms of other winners, don't really – not too many other ones. I think Theo Jackson did well, and I think he's got a good step up on some of the other backup safeties.
Yeah, I think those are all good calls. Really, the linebackers in general, like, I mean, the Jones and Campbell, like, yeah, they were underwhelming. Like, they basically played so slow that they had to move Rashad Weaver out to like a wide 9 because they weren't fast enough to get to the outside and make a play. And that hurts because that's what the Titans, you know, value in linebackers. And that's why Cunningham, Monty Rice, and David Long are all like such good fits, because they are so fast flow and you know, even if Cunningham's not as fast as the other two, he's got a longer reach, so it kind of doesn't matter as much. But that hurts those guys and, you know, their chance to make the roster or their chance to not be redundant with each other. I think David Anini, the undrafted free agent from Houston, like, I distinctly remember hearing Paul Kaharsky talk about how, you know, he hadn't shown anything in practice and they couldn't figure out why he was the highest paid undrafted free agent in the Titans class. And, you know, it's not like his name was popular or anything like that, but then he ends up with two sacks and like a strip fumble, like in the game in the fourth quarter. And it's like, okay, like now I can kind of see why that makes sense. So, you know, maybe he gets more playing time and maybe he gets more chances. And I don't know if he makes the roster, but he might be a preseason guy that they like and they want to have close in case something happens. So that was good. I think Murchison probably got hurt by this game, and I think we're just counting the days until he's cut and either somewhere else or on a practice squad or in Atlanta with all the other, you know, misfit toys from the defense and tight end room and stuff. So other than that, I don't think there's really. Corey Levin had a good game, you know, and I don't know if a lot of people watch, but he seems to be the backup right guard. And he also seems to be the backup center. And assuming that Jamarco Jones makes the team, he'll have the left guard spot. He'll be backing up that spot. But I think Corey Levin could do left guard if he needed to. And I think that's enough to where it will give him a good shot to make the roster. And I think it's important. Like, I think they need somebody who's behind Nate Davis and behind Ben Jones who can come in and play if they need to, because you know, they're so thin there, and they don't have to lean on Munyer, who has been waived with an IR settlement, I believe. But it's good to not have to, you know, worry about Munyer coming in. So, you know, that I don't think anybody else really stood out positively or negatively in a way that deserves, you know, an exceptional mention. But it's hard because, you know, the third and the fourth quarter were so dominated by people that we probably will never talk about again. But you know, who knows, we'll see if anybody else makes a splash, but those were the guys that stood out in that game to me.
Yep. Well, the Titans have another preseason game coming up, I believe on August 20th against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady won't be playing in that game. He's on like an extended absence. No one really knows what's going on. They say it's not a family emergency, but I don't know. There's speculation out there that his wife is pissed at him for coming back and playing football. I don't know what's going on. But he won't be playing against the tight ends. Mike Evans won't be playing either, I don't think. He had a hamstring injury pop up last week. Chris Godwin coming back from an injury. We won't see him either. Really not sure how many Buccaneers starters are going to play in this game. But doesn't really matter. I mean, there's stuff that we want to see from the tight ends that might not have anything to do with the other team. So what are some of the things that you want to see against the Buccaneers that maybe you didn't see in this game, or you want to see some players improve?
Well, I'm going to lump the joint practices in with the game just for fun. And I think one of the things that I want to see is the starters. Like, I think this is a good chance to see, like, you know, Taylor Lewan, who's talked about hating joint practices. So I would imagine he's going to get a fair number of reps there. And, you know, you get to see the starting offensive line, and you get to actually see these guys mix and match without saying, like, okay, you know, Dylan Radins is right guard here, is right tackle here, but the right guard is the third string right guard, or, you know, or what, like, there's no qualifications. It's just, okay, these are your starters, you know, for the most part. Let's see if they can hack it and let's see what they do. So that'll be interesting. I want to see, you know, selfishly and, you know, I think understandably, I want to see the Titans defensive backs just eat these Bucks wide receivers when they don't have Tom Brady and when they're without Mike Evans. Like, I want to see those guys, like, I want to see the Titans defensive backs who are young and still have a lot to prove, but that have that elite pedigree and that, you know, they've got all the talent in the world in that, you know, in those defensive back rooms. So I'd love to see them actually like step up and say, you know, wide receiver is the Bucs' best position. We're going to take ownership of our group and we're going to make it a priority to stop them and be emphatic about it when we do. And I would really like to see that. I honestly don't even know if I want to see Jeffrey Simmons because Jensen, the Bucs' starting center, you know, got hurt and I believe he's out for the year. So like, it, you know, obviously you're going against a backup and then their backup had like hamstring cramps or something so bad that he had to be carted off last week. So like,
was it Hainsey? Hainsey got injured as well, didn't he?
I think that's the backup center, but I'm not.
Their O-line is kind of in shambles. It's like, yeah, not great.
Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know, like, I don't want some try-hard undrafted free agent center coming in and trying to like cut Jeffrey Simmons on the backside and like I don't want somebody trying to be a hero in these practices to make the roster and then one of the guys that it's important get hurt. So I'm not even sure if I want to see Jeffrey Simmons. Like Derrick Henry, like I get because he kind of needs to get hit some because he's not doing anything in practice really. Like, I would like for him to take some 11-on-11 snaps so he's not going into the season just completely rusty and going from, you know, one game in the last 10 months to, okay, now you've got to carry the ball 30 times. Because as much as everybody says, like, you know, it's Derrick Henry, he's built different. It's like, okay, but then be built a little bit different in the fall, like in the early fall and in the late summer, so that I don't have to worry so much about whether you're going to be still built different this year. Like, let's see, you know, just do a little. I don't need him to carry it 40 times, but I'd like to see him and the first team offense basically all get together and, you know, do football. Like, you know, it's like I don't want to have to do the mental math in my head to figure out what he's going to look like when he's with the first team. And then something that got Dylan Raiden's last year, and it kind of hurt the perception of him for an entire season because he played, I believe he played more snaps than any tackle in preseason last year for any team. And he basically started like three whole games and he did really well. Like he did really well in the first two games. And then the third game of the season, they practiced against Tampa Bay. I believe this is what happened. It's either like this or the third game was good and the second game had this. But there was a 2-minute drill where Tryon, their first round rookie, like after, you know, after again, Raiden's had gotten all those snaps in the preseason in Florida and that heat during camp, like, you know, he was taking a bunch of snaps and he went out there and he like was clearly like gassed. Like he just didn't have his fastball. And he had one play where he got, you know, basically run over by Tryon. And everybody remembers the preseason like it was 80 plays of that when it was really 220 plays of really solid to good performance, and then that one thing that just bounces around in people's heads. So that's a long way of me saying I want to see how some of these younger guys deal with having to carry the load, because they're not going to make the veterans, you know, practice at the same rate they make the rookies and the young guys and the backups. Like those guys are going to have to prove that, you know, they deserve a spot, and those guys are probably going to have to pull double duty and play a lot in the preseason game too. So we'll see how, you know, how those guys do. And if anybody just turns out to be like an Iron Man and makes their way all the way through and doesn't show any of that fatigue. But, you know, if you can do that, like Elijah Molden, I think was that guy for the Titans last year. Like he had some tough reps, but then he also came out in the game and had like a sack and it had a couple of really nice like pass deflections and looked really good. And that was sort of the start of him earning that slot job as a rookie. So we'll see if anybody comes out and does that this year, but that's the biggest thing on a macro level that I want to see is which of those guys can really hang and be that standout.
I agree. I think the practices are more important than the actual game itself, because I don't know how many of these starters are actually going to play in the game, but a lot of them are going to be at those joint practices. And that's where you kind of have those one-on-one situations at some of these positions that really kind of make you as a player. Other than the obvious Blaine Gabbert, Julio Jones, Logan Ryan revenge tour, which I'm interested, obviously, to see. Blaine Gabbert, not really, but Julio and Logan Ryan will be interesting. I'm very intrigued by the matchup between the Titans' interior offensive line, particularly at left guard with Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones, assuming they're still in competition at that spot. A lot of they're going to be going up against Vita Vea, Akeem Hicks, Nunez Roaches, Pat O'Connor, some of these really solid nose tackles, not nose tackles, defensive tackles that really get just a lot of push on the inside, especially in one-on-one situations. So I think it's pretty good trial by fire in these practices for them. And if they come out, you know, winning, you know, at least half of those battles, I think you feel pretty good about either one of them. So that'll definitely be interesting to see. In terms of the game, I'd like to see, like I mentioned before, I'd like to see Malik Willis kind of take more chances and continue his development. But there really isn't anything other than that's too outstanding in terms of what we're expecting or what we'd really want to see. I don't think Derrick Henry's going to play in this game, right? Did they say he's not going to play in any of the games?
No, yeah, he's not playing. I don't know if they've officially come out and said it, but they've done everything except say that he's not playing. Like,
yeah.
He and Tannehill, I don't think, have any shot of playing in the actual games.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing them for a drive, but I don't care. I don't think it matters. But we'll see. Maybe they surprise us. Maybe they get the whole starting offense out there. Who knows with Vrabel at this point? He might do anything. So we're going to take another ad break, and then we're going to come back and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back here with No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast, and we are going to wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. Will, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm glad we started with mine because I think it kind of piggybacks off of our last segment pretty well. So I went back and I was trying to look at, you know, hot takes that may have come out during the joint practices last year with the Titans and Bucks, and I found one that I think is a really good sort of time capsule of why when you get a lot of your starters rested and you get beat writers who are focused on like one particular side of the ball, because just as sort of context, usually what happens is there's two fields that they use, and one of them will be the Bucks offense versus the Titans defense, and then they'll flip it for the other one. So it's not like they're trying to share a field, like they're just doing their work like that. And so last year, John Ledyard I don't know if he's with Pewter Report or what he's doing exactly, but he was covering the Titans defense and the Bucks offense. Now, remember, like the Titans defense didn't necessarily bring everybody. Like they brought some backups, and I think they left like I think they brought Simmons, but I don't think they brought Denico Autry, and I think Bud Dupree was still like banged up and recovering. So I think they had some of their guys missing, to be fair. But the tweet that John Ledyard had was, the Titans I was most impressed by today were number one, Caleb Farley, number two, Jayon Brown, number three, Laurell Murchison. And it's a great example of why sometimes you feel like these beat writers will fall in love with somebody in their own camp. And then it's like, we all know what Laurell Murchison is, like, and what, you know, and what he did last year and kind of what he's been, which is like a fringe player who had potential early, but never really seemed to take that step. So he was probably just going against a third string guy that he was whooping up on. And then Jayon Brown, like, you know, we like Jayon Brown. We've loved Jayon Brown for a long time, but he, ever since he got injured in, I think, 2019, or after he was injured and then came back in 2019, like, he just didn't really have the same fastball. He was never the same guy. And then Caleb Farley, like, that's a super weird choice because he was so raw that last year, like, I mean, you could watch him at any point and you could see it's like, okay, he's got, like, sort of like Malik Willis, where it's like he's got these physical tools where if you think you're behind him and the ball's in the air, he's going to close faster than your receiver can outrun, and he's going to use his long arms to knock passes away. But by no means was he, you know, technically efficient yet or refined. And to have him and not, you know, not pick Christian Fulton or Elijah Molden or Janoris Jenkins or, you know, Amani Hooker or Kevin Byard, like all these other guys who were starters last year and who were really, really good. Or, like I said, if Jeffrey Simmons was there, to not say Jeffrey Simmons. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just sort of a great example of don't put too much stock into what, you know, people come away with from these joint practices, especially if they're not people who cover, you know, the Titans and know what they're actually talking about.
Yeah, also, football sometimes is very subjective. Like, a player might look really good to one person, and then the other person is like, dang, this guy sucks. Like, it's just how it is. And, especially like you said, when it's someone who doesn't watch the Titans very often. And we know other analysts don't like to watch the Titans, period. So take most of the reports that come out of these joint practices with a grain of salt, unless, of course, they confirm your priors, then definitely it's all very accurate information. I'm going to finish up with my Stop the Nonsense. This is just yet another another one in a long line of PFF stinks propaganda. Like, I don't know what else we have to do to get these guys canceled. So Austin Gale, who previously worked for PFF, by the way, I think he works for Ringer now, put up a clip. It was of Agbani Okoronkwo kind of working Trevor Penning, the Saints' first-round left tackle, which in itself is hilarious because we had that report come out on Penning getting kicked out of practice because he's starting fights with all of his teammates. And that's what everyone like praised him for in the draft process. Oh, he's got a mean streak. He's so cool. That's exactly what you want out of a tackle. Which no, not necessarily. It's probably just going to lead to penalties at the next level. But the fact that he's getting worked by Okoronkwo, who I like Okoronkwo, but it's not like he's, you know, Von Miller. That's pretty funny. But then, we get some follow up tweets in the replies. With Penning's PFF grade from this game, for only from this game, his overall was an 82.6, which, okay, like you would say, that's pretty good. But then you look at the separate grading systems, and his run blocking grade was a 94.8, but his pass blocking grade was a 28.6. So someone do the math on that and explain how that adds up to 82.6. And you can't say that, you know, maybe he played more run blocking snaps Well, I can't talk. He didn't. He played 29 run block snaps and then 28 pass block snaps. So this makes absolutely no sense. I mean, they even say he had a penalty, first of all. He gave up a sack, he gave up a hit, and he gave up 5 total pressures. So how is his overall grade an 82.6, which, by the way, in the PFF like grading system, that's almost like a Pro Bowl level type of player. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. This same thing happened with Quisenberry last year, if you guys remember, where he had like a 90-plus run blocking rate, so his overall was 80, but he had given up the most sacks in the entire league. But his overall was still like, oh, he's one of the best right tackles in the league. So just ridiculous. Just another more evidence to support the fact that we should not take PFF seriously in any way.
No, and like, you know, you could argue it's like, oh, maybe it was a small sample size, so like they reward, you know, doing a lot, like doing a cumulative thing, like where it's like if you have one bad pass block, it's not as good as it, blah blah blah. Like, but you're right. Like they had 29 run block snaps and 28 pass blocks, which means there's 57 blocks. Like, it's not like it was a full game's worth, and it's just, I don't know. It's very aggravating because people continue to use that instead of their own eyes. And they're like, okay, well, you know, he must have had a pretty good day. Like PFF said, he was their highest graded run blocker, you know, in X amount of years. Because people have to remember, PFF is just like, it's just a marketing company. Like they watch football kind of, but their main business is trying to get you to use their analytics numbers. And now that it's shorthand, it's like they don't have to put any effort in. They can just assign whatever grades they want, and they've got so many people using their, you know, there's no competitor for them, so they've got so many people using their system and their numbers that it doesn't matter if they're accurate or not, they're what you're going to use. So it's frustrating because at this point they've gotten too big to be called out effectively, because they've gotten past the point of caring. Like that they will never look at those numbers critically again. Like that's, you know, they would never change a number anyway, and they don't want you to. Like, the more you talk bad about their product on Twitter, the more, you know, eyes they get on their product. And then when they say something that you finally agree with, people are going to retweet it, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and their social media accounts are like pure clickbait at this point, like just shock value, ridiculous statements. It's
almost like it's done by AI, where it's just like,
right,
who's gonna stop this offense? And it's like,
yeah,
you believe that this player had this rating, then it's like it'll be like a gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal, and it's like the top three rookies from this week. And then it's like it'll be like a long snapper, a quarterback who played terribly, and like a third string running back who got like 3 carries. And then they're like, they just want you to click and go look up the, you know, go look at their numbers and see where your favorite player was. And it's just like, whatever, like just so aggravating at this point.
Yeah. I just went through some of their tweets, and one of them was Drew Luck is cooking with a clip from a preseason game in the third quarter. So that's all you need to know. That'll do it for us. Hopefully the Titans can get back to their winning ways against the Buccaneers in their next preseason game. Hopefully we don't suffer too many injuries. We actually didn't talk about injuries. I think the only one was Chris Jackson. Not sure on his status. We all know Vrabel is very low-key about injuries and doesn't divulge too much information. But hopefully he's okay, and hopefully the Titans can stay healthy after this Bucks game. So thanks for tuning in, and remember to always stop the nonsense.
When you need
mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.